on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Sitting here in the beautiful WGN studios on a rainy day, looking out at the Swiss Hotel and Navy Pier, the Chicago River, it's all gray, and so is my soul. And you know why my soul is gray and sad, like a rainy day? Because the other day in the paper, I criticized President Trump, and rightfully so, for, you know, causing all this pain on the children. I wanted to join in with my colleagues of the left and everybody in the Democratic media complex and spank them a little bit. But you know what's happened since then? So what's happened since then is the new policy came out, executive order. He caved on the law, and he wants to keep all the families together, and now it's not enough. So if you cross the border illegally with your children, they'll keep you together. They won't separate you, as per the Ninth Circuit Court, federal court tells us, Court of Appeals. Now they're going to keep you together for a while until the lawyers on the left get together and file lawsuits about the internment camps. But in the meantime, Democrats aren't happy. It doesn't go far enough, they say. Dick Durbin's all upset. It doesn't go far enough. Samantha Bee, who I think is the Democratic Party's press secretary, doesn't say it doesn't go far enough. Late-night talk show host Luis Gutierrez says it doesn't go far enough. And then he was asked, how did you feel about Obama? Because this was the Obama policy before the court stepped in and said you couldn't wrap children in tinfoil and keep them in cages with their families, Mr. President. And nobody cried then. And they said, Luis Gutierrez, man of the left, heroic taxpayers, $275 a year for your $350,000 mansion in Chicago until John Cass found you out. Why didn't you criticize Obama for doing the same thing that you're saying Trump shouldn't be doing? And he said, Obama had a soul. Obama had a heart. Because it's only about feelings and your party affiliation and really the rule of law and order and whether we have borders or not, be damned. Because this is politics, baby. And this is the Chicago way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Jeff Carlin's going to come back here in a second. He's out looking for his phone. But there's something I'm thinking about. Oh, there you are, Jeff Carlin. I was just telling everybody you went out to look for your phone. We're sitting in the new studios. Something I'm thinking about, Jeff.
Yeah, John.
Besides peaches, because now I've got to go to get the Red Haven peaches in Michigan, and then near Carbondale, I hear there's peaches there. Governor Rauner's people are telling me there's great peaches there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I love a peach, you know.
You know, it's funny you bring up peaches. Father's Day was last weekend, and my dad wisely decided to postpone it a week because it was too damn hot. And I was like, oh, then I'll make a pie. I'll make a pie for Father's Day. And my dad's choice was a peach pie. Ah, perfect. I'll make a peach pie.
Where are the peaches?
Or where are the peaches? And I was thinking, oh, now I know sort of where the peaches are. Looking at some of the comments on your.
Yeah. I did that piece. Calhoun County, Calhoun, Illinois, down in, anything past Posen, I get lost, and anything north of 95th Street, I don't know about. So here's the thing. The media's gone crazy, Jeff Carlin. I'm sorry. I know we're part of it, and we say the media, but the media has gone crazy, and I can't wait to ask Scott Stannis about this, but when he comes in. Oh, I didn't do the introductions.
We're out of sorts.
Room for me. Still looking at the Swiss Hotel to see if I could see any like erotica. The anyway, this is John Cass, mild-mannered columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Jeff Carlin, WGN producer and master pie baker. Again, another pie brag by Jeff. I'm going to go to drive to Michigan. I'm going to get you some, like a whole case of blueberries, damn it.
Oh, then it's done.
I'm tying you to your bench, to your workbench.
Well, the irony of it is, so I was pitching this to my dad. Oh, I'm like, perfect. We'll do a cookout. I'll bring some pie. I'll make my famous roast potatoes. Ooh. And then my dad was like, you know, that's a lot of work. You just moved to a new space. And I, you know, don't worry about it. I'm like, no, let me do it. He's like, no, don't worry about it. We'll do cake. We'll have a cake. I'm like, all right, fine. So my plan was to make two pies, make one pie for my dad and one pie for the Cass family.
Ooh, what about for the Carlin house?
Well, we'd have one.
Christine likes pie.
Well, we can only.
She's like, we shouldn't have pie. Is she one of these pie Nazis? Like, it's good to have one piece at your dad's, but then leave it there.
We've got a wedding to go to later this summer, so we're like, you know, we've got to curtail our sugars and sweet treats.
You got a wedding later in the summer?
Yeah.
So you can't have pie now?
Wow, we're building toward it.
My God. Jeff, what is the secret of pie in humidity?
The secret of pie in humidity is...
The pie crust, right?
Right, is to keep chilling it. So to work it, don't try to push yourself to work pie dough for a long extended period of time. I mean, pull it out of the freezer. What I do is I freeze my butter. You got to freeze your butter. That's golden rule. And then you shred your butter. Most people try to break it into cubes and then freeze it. And then it becomes impossible to work with. But if you freeze it and then take it over a grater. The big holes. So you get nice little tiny slices. Those, when you work into the flour, you don't have to work as hard and it doesn't melt while you're working it. Then put it back in the fridge or freezer if you have space for it for 20 minutes. Let it firm up again. Bring it back out so it's nice and tight and, you know, almost frozen. And then when you roll it out, work it for maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes tops, back in the fridge. Let it sit.
Use vodka instead of water.
And always use vodka instead of water, regardless.
If it says 2 cups of cold water, you use 2 cups of vodka?
No.
One to one,
yeah. So you want to cut your water, whatever they call for water, to half that, go half vodka.
And the glutens, reduces the glutens.
Right, reduces your gluten, so you get, the water. That's America's Test Kitchen for you. Yeah. The vodka will evaporate in the heat, and it leaves you the gaps, and that gives you the flakiness. That's what you want. And the water will do it, but not at a much higher temperature, and so you need to be baking it longer. And the vodka will give you a much flakier crust at a shorter bake time.
What about lard shortening?
I use vegetable shortening, but lard works just the same.
Is it flakier, even flakier?
Oh, with lard, most likely, yeah. You get more, there's more fat in the dough.
Ooh.
Yeah. But chilling it. And then the key to it all is once you roll it out and you've got it in the pan, your pie plate, and you've crimped your sides, put it back in the fridge and let it rest for another 20 minutes in the fridge so it's nice and chilled. Because if you don't, once you put it in the oven, it'll shrink and it'll sweat out all the butter and moisture will sweat out before it has time to set. If you put it in the oven and when it's cold, the outer dough will crisp up and lock in the moisture. And that's where you get your crispiness. That's where you get the flakiness.
Jeff Carlin, pie tricks.
That's right.
What last question on the pies.
Okay.
People use big cans of blueberry
Yeah.
They use cans. Do you use cans or?
I don't do cans, but I do frozen. I use IQF.
Dun, dun, dun. Are you kidding me, man?
Well, individually quick frozen fruit is just, the flavor, because in a pie you're baking it, is just as good as fresh fruit in a pie. Because,
really?
Well, usually you can get variances in fresh fruit, and so sometimes the whole batch will be a little more tart. And when it's quick frozen, a lot of that stuff is quality control to hit a certain flavor, and they're usually the same size.
Are they good to eat when they're frozen, like little frozen blueberries?
I do that.
Just for snacks?
Yeah, that's always good. Mm-hmm. I always recommend frozen because you don't have to thaw it. You just pull it out, toss it with your tapioca, your sugar.
As opposed to sitting there at the kitchen table with a paring knife, and you and your wife, or you and your girlfriend, or you and your significant other, I don't care how you swing, as long as you're listening to the Chicago way, and you're listening to the podcast, you've got your paring knives out, you're nodding to each other like, yeah, we're paring these, we're peeling these peaches, and then you slice them or cut them up into cubes, throw them in a saucepan with sugar, a little butter. What else?
Well, for a filling?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the, and then a little bit of tapioca. You want to put it into, it'll give you a solidify it, give you that thickness that you want once it cooks up.
Yeah, you got to have that.
But only, I mean, not much. I mean, you throw
like
it in.
A half a teaspoon or a teaspoon?
Yeah, a teaspoon, depending on, I mean, if you're making a double pie, you know, you put in a teaspoon worth.
What's a double pie?
Well, if you, most pies are, so you have double crust pie, so you make two crusts, one for the top, one for the bottom. But if you're making an open peach pie.
No, I got to have the top.
Well, there's a nice way to do it, too, where you
not
can,
lattice.
Oh, lattice is fun.
Lattice, is lattice super, like super, the primo?
Oh, is yeah. Lattice is a skill. I mean, that's real baker's skill.
I did get a lattice pie from Jeff.
Yeah?
Fruit pie.
Yeah, that was my mixed berry.
Mixed berries, yeah.
With a lavender-infused crust.
Just give me a piece of some Sherman's ice cream from South Haven, and I'm ready to go.
Absolutely.
Moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat.
All right, in other news, I gotta ask you this question. Where the hell, what is going on with the media, Mr. Media?
I don't know, man.
Wait, if it was, you know, people were crying and writing poetry, where are we gonna... What are we going to tell the children?
I know.
And all that? Okay, fine. So Trump caves. Now what? Now it's, oh, how dare you keep these families locked up? When that's what exactly what
right,
Obama did.
Exactly.
Wrapping them up in tinfoil. You've seen those pictures?
Yep. Yeah. I,
what is going on with what is happening to my profession?
It's funny. Roe and I were talking about this. I was, you know, watching CNN. While all this is happening, and then CNN, and now it's the crying news network, because I've seen at least four different hosts and reporters tear up when talking about, you know, the heartbreak of these families and they're going through it. And I get it. Absolutely. You know, nobody...
Really? I'd like to take a stick and whack them in the head, because did they ever see broadcast news?
Yeah.
See broadcast news about the crying.
Right.
You don't cry.
Exactly.
There's no crying in news.
Right. I understand that that's emotional, but yeah, exactly. But, you know, the thing that's really driving me nuts, and it's not really media specific, because it's really more on the on social media. I mean, I know your question's on the media specifically, but there's this, the Auschwitz comparison. People, this is all over social media. People are comparing what's happening to these
Michael
families.
Hayden, CIA director and former never-Trumper, or current never-Trumper, compared the Trump detention centers, not the Obama detention centers that he was part of. The Trump detention centers to Auschwitz.
I know, and that boils my blood.
Why?
Because it undermines what happened at Auschwitz.
Correct.
Because absolutely no doubt these children are going through a traumatic experience being separated from their parents. The young ones, specifically the really young ones.
Why don't you go to 26th Street in California?
Absolutely.
You
want
to see it? Mommy gets caught six rocks in her. Bag.
Yeah.
See you later, Mom.
Absolutely. It's traumatic, but it's nothing compared to what happened at Auschwitz and the concentration camps. They weren't concentration camps for – that was their spin on it.
People were
they
trying were
extermination.
To get out.
Yeah, they were extermination camps.
Yeah.
And for people to make that comparison, it's a slap in the face to people who were starved to death, who were killed because they had disability.
Anything goes. Anything goes.
Terrible.
You know what? No, here's the thing. You can stay. Jeff Carlin and John Cass are having a beautiful sausage and peppers lunch at
Valaria, which is now across the river.
Which doesn't
sponsor us,
this
right.
show. And all of a sudden, a bunch of lefties with Guy Fox masks come in. They leave you alone because you're kind of like not their side, but you're moderate. And they see me, and they say, you know, Cass, shut up. You suck. What's that about? Not that they did, but I'm just saying, what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
It's about shutting you up. It's about silence. And now the media, with all these crying actors, crying talent, you know, it used to be, did you have that you have the right features for news.
Right.
Right? You have to have the right features. And you know what they're saying. You got to be, you have to, when people look at a news person, they have to, they want to have other thoughts in their head. That's what
it's going to be appealing.
Appealing, yes. Let's use euphemisms. But for the, for, but that is part of the Hume number, right?
Yeah.
And now the, now another addition is the crying.
Right. And when you say actors, you're not referring to as...
Rachel Maddow? Right. Yeah, actor.
Right. No, you're referring to that, those as actors, not not as... what's her face?
One of the some actor.
No, we
about
talked
it?
About oh, her. Sure. You talked about her on the Ann. Oh shoot! I'll have to edit this out.
What Ann Coulter? What?
Yeah, Ann Coulter accusing the families and the children of being paid actors and crying actors and.
Saying, oh no, that was yeah. Somebody accused somebody, but you know what? The outrage. If you're on the left, here's the problem. Though I am sitting on the sugar cookie in the middle of a liberal. Milk sea, it is crumbling around me. Where are you? Are you guys going to help me? Because I swear to God Almighty that I've, I'm going to walk into the Tribune for the first time in my life, the new Tribune offices, and it will be like every other newsroom in the country. In this, it'll be Trump sucks. The kids shouldn't be in the in the camps with the families. Let's just do something, and because I feel, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling sad. I'm crying, Jeff. I'm crying, Jeff. Can you have policy? Can you have straight, good policy, one kind or another, when you're crying?
Oh, I think emotion gets in the way.
So, what's your recommendation? You don't want the kids in the. You don't want the kids separated from the mommies and daddies, so you want them, so they're going to stay together, or do we let them go?
Oh, I don't think you let them go.
No, that's what the Democrats want.
I just think, admit it. Yeah, we need it. It sounds crazy, but we need that wall. I mean, you really look at the model of like Israel Gaza, and obviously take that history and the politics out of it. Just the tactic of it.
And you're not one of these wall people.
No.
I don't think you're a wall person. I don't think you're even that big of a Trump guy.
No, not at all. But I mean, the one of the fundamental objectives of government is to protect territory, to protect your territory, to protect your entity. And that includes your borders. And if we want to have refugees, we want to have people be a place for people to come and get a better life and be a savior to the world, that's a different story. But we need to do it. We need to do it in a different way.
They have to grovel through the process.
Well, yeah, and if the process is slow, then we can fix it. You know, whoever's in charge can increase it to make it more fluid, or if whoever's in charge can put a tamp down on it as their politics, you know, see fit. That's how this country works. But being an open place where it floods in and people just do whatever they want, that's not how countries should work. And in Israel and Gaza, that border is secure.
But there's tunnels under it.
Well, yeah, but
that's but the Israelis don't. Yeah. You know what? Don't you don't think the Israelis know where the tunnels are? They probably dug a few like trick tunnels to trap people.
Right.
Okay, they're not stupid. Now, here's the deal, though: with so much in the media, with the media having its like hysteria over this, writing poetry. You know, here's another thing, and we're going to bring this up with. Scott Stannis, yeah. If he ever shows up.
He should be here shortly.
You want to know about somebody's writing, read their writing. But you also might want to do something else. You also might want to check their Twitter.
Yes.
Because I've got a tip for everybody out there listening. You want to look at my Twitter account? I'm not going to say some politician I agree with is a, quote, bag of... rhymes with sticks, okay? I'm not going to use feminine or genitalia to describe people I disagree with. I'm not going to even tweet out that you should all shut somebody up, shut people up with whom you disagree. I'm maybe too old school. I believe in discourse. I believe in dialogue, in proper dialogue, like we do on the Chicago Way. What I can't stand is the fascism of the left or the right. And what I'm seeing, when you look at Jeff Carlin, your Twitter feed is pretty tame.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see any, you guys suck, or this sucks, or, you know, Gutierrez is a bag of bleeps or anything,
right?
But why is it that some journalists think that they can do it? I mean, what allows them to do it, and what impact does that have on their on the way they're viewed by news consumers and why and the media? And how's the media viewed when you see people do that stuff? Take a stand, Jeff Carlin. I'm already out on the limb.
I don't think those people are journalists. In my, I think you lose your.
They are journalists because they're getting paid.
Yeah, but
you look at them all the time.
There's something else. I mean, you lose the ability. It's like being an international athlete. You know, once you get paid, you can no longer qualify in theory. To an extent, I mean, those
well,
used to,
it used to be under the good rules when
right.
they were amateurs,
right? Exactly,
in the Olympics, right?
Exactly, and I think the same thing should go for journalists. You lose your credibility when your opinion or becomes tainted or taints what you're doing.
Joy Reid, she lied about stuff. Yeah. Oh, I didn't write that homophobic stuff. Somebody made it up for me. Then, oh yes, I did.
Right.
Sorry, forget it. She's still screaming. I know, and people I know, I see their Twitter feeds. I'm like, I cannot believe this stuff gets out there. Now, this builds a division in the country where journalism used to be kind, you know, there were people with opinions like me, and there were people with who did straight news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's okay. But now when you see editors,
yeah,
there are editors out there tweeting stuff. So if they're tweeting stuff with a political point of view, are you surprised that the publications have that political point of view in them? You see how it's all
we're,
it's like the Weimar Republic. All we need is Joel, what's his name? Joel Gray? Well, who's the, you know, in, what was the movie? Moulin Rouge?
Oh, yeah.
Who is it?
I think I saw that once.
We are the Weimar Republic. We're going to have the left now is the media, except for me and a few others, and the Democratic Party and the people they say they represent, but they really don't, screaming to change the law, but they don't come up with the law. They want the borders open, but they're not doing anything about it. So it's just becoming, it's building up. And then on the other side, you have people, normal people, decent folk, who now are feel like they have to join a club that they wouldn't join. Not the racist club, not the Nazi club, but maybe the Trump club. And this becomes, it's bipolar. And it's bad.
Hey, Evelyn. Can I ask you a question? You got a moment? Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a peach.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a 2-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
Oh, you wish me well. You couldn't tell that I've been crying over you. Crying over you. Then you said so long, left me standing.
Joining us now is Scott Stanis, award-winning Tribune editorial cartoonist and also a decent man and my friend.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
we are. Oh, gosh.
Let's fight now, okay?
Okay.
Because, you know, I just want to. I feel like crying for two reasons. One, you're going to walk me over to the Tribune today.
Oh. Okay.
You don't want to? You don't want to go? I don't want to go either, but I just have to show up.
It's the People's Republic of cubicles, yeah. Some pigs are more equal than others, apparently.
Oh, nice. Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, yeah.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that when no one can hear us.
Yes.
I'll get a lowdown on that one. And the other thing that makes me cry is that I want to cry about the plight of the children. I want to cry like Rachel Maddow, who I defended once on a podcast thing that I sent to Jeff, but we decided not to use it. But I've since changed my mind. So you're going to erase it. Rachel Maddow and all the criers, the four criers of CNN, everybody's crying. Everybody's virtue signaling. Everybody's, Louis Gutierrez and Dick Durbin and their press secretary, Samantha Bee.
The fellow travelers.
Feckless Samantha Bee. They are all complaining that the Trump policy, which is now the Obama policy, which was the Obama policy, let's hold, you're going to cross the border illegally, we'll hold you together with your children. That was the Obama policy when he wrapped them up in aluminum blankets and, you know, those silvery space-age blankets and the slept in cages on the floor of the gym. Yeah. So that's the policy that he's going back to, but the Democrats don't like that.
Oh, well, they don't. You and I both know that there's
that's not
what's at play here.
What is at play here? What's the real, that's, Scott, what's the real thing? What do they want?
You and I both know what they really want. They want the issue. They want the visuals. Because they're powerful, and
cry,
they are.
Because emotions are important to news media. There's nothing like crying when you're a columnist or a...
Well, emotions, there's nothing wrong with emotion. I don't dismiss emotion because I think that's part of it. But you also have to have a practical approach to this stuff, right? But they wanted, you know, they wanted this issue to go forward.
They don't want borders. Just admit it. That's what they don't want. Well, they want everybody to come in. You get caught illegally crossing the border with your kids. Here's what we'll do. We'll let you get into the country and hope you come back for a hearing, right?
Yeah.
That's what they want.
I think that's part of it. And you and I, again, it comes back to the cynicism of politics. They want the votes. And anyone who says that this is, you know, not about getting votes and that they can't vote.
Auschwitz.
We get that too. Yeah, you obviously get those comparisons, which are over the top. You know what, John? I mean, you know, Nazis are Nazis. You know, that's how this works.
The United States is not a Nazi nation.
No.
Trump is not a Nazi. Cut the shit, okay? Because then you're building up. You're building up.
It is. It's an overblown, overused. First of all, it's a lazy metaphor.
He's a barbarian, a Vulgarian at our gates, all that other stuff.
Well, he is a Vulgarian.
Grabbing women, all that bragging. But when you say the United States policy that Obama and Clinton supported and then were changed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Opinion, which is a liberal fantasy island, right?
It truly is.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is liberal fantasy island, and they dictate policy. So if it's the same policy, how is Obama fascist? Is he Hitler too?
I think he's probably more so in a sense that everyone thought, as you've mentioned a million times, and you were right, you know, smoke the opium.
I'm almost out. I got a couple more.
They're building a monument to hopium, so they'll have plenty of there.
Oh, you know what I just found?
Will they have fields of it?
Yeah.
Jeff Carlin has six Obama heads in his little office.
Six?
No. I have two Obama heads, one Hillary, one Bernie, and a Trump.
So a Bernie, what does a Bernie grow?
It grows.
It grows nopium.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And so, Scott, you were saying.
Oh, I was just saying, you just touched on something, and you may want to cut this out, but I just want to talk about this. Have you seen the film? It's playing at the Siskel Center this week, and it's about, have you heard this? Look it up.
Kotzenzeiki's thing?
No, it's called Young Karl Marx. He's a hipster.
What?
He's a hipster. Stop. With a mission. I'm not kidding. He's like sexy. Stop. He's sexy Karl. And it's hilarious. And the kids are going to eat this up, and there's going to be, he fought for the, and his look at and his economics, there's a lot to be said for that. There truly are.
Sure.
It's his solutions that are like unworkable.
My professors would tell me. They would tell me, well, you know, the Sandinistas, they in Nicaragua, they're communists, but they there's a lot to be said for them. And you know what I would think? I would think of the thousands of bodies left in Greece.
Thousands?
Thousands
across
of bodies.
The globe, tens of millions.
I know, but I can only speak to the ones that my family saw. Now, we were for the king. I'm not a commie. I'm not even remotely, as you know, right? The communists, like the Democrats, rule by the force of government. It's not about liberty. It's about imposing their will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Through force.
Yes. Now, see, okay, I've been, my conservatism gets questioned a lot, and that's, there's a reason I bring all this up, is that here's what I believe. I've worked in Republican politics my entire life. You know, I was 13 years old working on Richard Nixon's reelection campaign, which put me, you know, solidly on the do not date list,
right,
apparently. And I was actually on this, I was a spokesman for the Ford campaign in 1976, worked on the California campaign for George H.W. Bush until.
I never worked on a political campaign in my life.
No, they're fun. Yeah. That's where I thought that's the direction I wanted my career to go initially. I was going to be a lawyer and get and do all this stuff. So, and I believe in smaller government, lower taxes, get the government out of the way of the small businessman or woman so that they can succeed in this government country. That's what I believe. Now, niggling on the side, immigration is one of those issues where I take a fairly libertarian view, and you and I are going to disagree. Okay, I do believe that I don't disagree with the wall. I think we should have a liberal immigration policy, small L, immigration policy.
Is your policy allow people to walk to cross the border without appealing through the point of entry? Okay, then we can talk.
They can. I say swab their cheek. You know, take their picture, tell me where you are. And if you're not there, you're gone. But you come into this country, especially if you have someone sponsoring you, like my family did, like your family did. That just makes sense to me to have that grew this country. How many of my family?
No. How many of your family came in and immediately went on some sort of government assistance?
Oh, well, my dad's family did during the Depression.
During the Depression, I'm not talking about the whole
The stress, listen, I lived in California. I'm a California native. And the stress on that system is, anyone who tells you that it's not a stress on infrastructure is lying. It is absolutely a stress on infrastructure. No question. So one thing they tried to do, Republicans, if you remember, tried to do is say, if you're not, you know, a legal American, you don't get anything. You don't get food stamps. You don't get free housing or subsidized housing. You don't get any of that stuff.
What did the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals say?
You can't do that!
Right, exactly. One of them did. I don't want to starve anybody. I don't want people on the ground. You know, this is not Rome where you have to sell yourself to live. I want people to live, but I want a country. You can't have a country without borders.
Right, exactly. And that's why I said the wall, either virtual or real, makes sense. It just does. Staving off, you know, we have been stopping since the zero tolerance policy kicked in, 50,000 people a month. Do the math. That's 200,000 people in 4 months that they have stopped from coming across the border. They're leaving horrendous circumstances, especially in Central and South America. You mentioned Nicaragua.
Not
earlier.
My problem.
No, it's not. But
my problem is I got thousands of people in horrendous circumstances in the city of Chicago. I've got kids who aren't being educated. I've got children who are being shot. I got parents separated from their children because they're arrested for doing drugs. I guess we should just let them go. I've got all that chaos. I've got 400,000 children, half in the public schools, that has been proven to allow sexual abuse and rape. And not even do anything about it. No one say anything.
So
I just got some problems here.
Can you extend compassion to more than one group, though?
It's interesting that it's interesting that the Democrats are not being held to account by the media.
Oh no, you're right.
Tom Bevin put this out. They keep moving the goalposts. Dick Durbin the other day said it's not. Oh. We shouldn't even, it's cruel to keep parents and children together. Well, that's what you wanted.
Wait, to keep them together?
Together, you know, to keep them should. But isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah.
And now he's doing what Obama did before the Ninth Circuit said no. Where's the journalistic rigor to cut through the emotion on this from the left? Is it impossible given that so much of the media is of the left and they can't even hear themselves?
I think there's two factors. One is what you just mentioned, is that the natural prejudices of the of newsroom, of every newsroom I've ever worked in. But it's also coupled with the diminishment of newsrooms and what's happened. You don't have the voices. Back when you and I started, back when you and I were vigorous young Turks.
Still vigorous.
Yes.
Anyway, go on.
Well, okay. Well, you were vigorous, and remain vigorous.
That's a Greek thing. What can I say?
But the newsrooms, if you remember, the surveys back then and the polls back then show that newsrooms were roughly 30-35% conservative, Republican conservative, right?
Right.
That number is now 7.
That's a lot. It's overstated. 7?
7%? You think that's overstated?
Look, you're on one side of the sugar cookie. I'm on the other. Kristen McQuarrie, that's 3. 3.
We don't have any in the closet?
Might have some in the closet, maybe hiding. Jeff Carlin, maybe behind his pie closet in the pantry. But he's still really trying to be a moderate.
But let me ask you this question, and I mean this in all sincerity. I don't.
Oh God, that means not sincerity.
Oh no, I mean this in total sincerity.
Say that.
I know. Okay, you're right. It's like when someone says, "Let me be," to be honest, and you go, "Oh, horse crap." Right, no, you don't.
But I like what you said. But
yeah.
Anyway,
but I do have this question about that the media has gotten incredibly liberal and more. Less and more transparent about it, then. Let's put it that way.
What about tweets? I'm going to tell everybody that's listening to the Chicago Way that one thing people should do is you really want to find out about a journalist and or a publication, an editor, anyone in public life, not just read their commentary, read their tweets.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right, because that's unfiltered. And Facebook the same way. But my question to you and to me, and to people like us, we work in this environment, we work for this company, we view it for what it is, yet we still cash their checks. What does that say about us?
Those checks are no longer signed by Tronc, though. That's pretty cool.
Did they change the name?
Yeah.
Tribune Publishing.
Oh, great.
It's a great day for journalism awesome. And media. And
the dumbest name in corporate history. Tronc.
John is staring at me like he's ready to pull me out the window.
No, I'm not gonna. I'm just the whole Tronc thing. I've got enough trouble, and so does Scott, and so do you. You've got 5 shows to produce a week. Scott has, I don't know how many dozen cartoons you write a week, plus your Prickly City, plus the podcast.
Yeah.
John has the monologue in the 4 columns that everybody in Chicago reads and the left hates. So they write these terrible things
on social media
about my physical appearance and my sexual prowess and my sexual orientation.
I think
not that there's anything wrong with not having one.
Hashtag epic. Would that be the answer?
Epic.
To that
one? Yeah, epic.
Just throwing it out there.
All right. But no. I mean, look, we're so liberal now in our business, even more so. And on the day that we, you know. This week, or last week, we heard Charles Krautheimer died.
Ah, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Did you know him?
They hated him. I told a story last week on the podcast where we met, where in Cleveland, is that okay?
Go for it.
In Cleveland, the Republican National Convention, of course, he wasn't happy about being there. And it was like 100,000 degrees, 100 degrees, literally. And the day you're sweating through your suit. And I go, when I represent the Tribune, I'm in jacket and tie. So we're standing there. He's in his wheelchair, not standing. We're two people on the outside of the convention trying to get in through the gates. And we don't know where we are, and they won't let us in. And he says, we're just sweating. And I'm just thinking, I'm sweating through my suit, but I'm sweating next to Charles Krautheimer. That's pretty cool. And he said, where am I? And I turned to him and I said, where are we going?
That's deep, man.
And it's so like, you know, philosophy 101, right? He gave me the Charles Krautheimer smirk. He's like, okay, ta-ta. Rolled off.
Yeah, he was a great voice. What a loss. I mean, truly, I love his mind.
Did you ever have him on the show?
We used to had him on once over with Don and Roma back in the day.
How was that?
That was, I mean, talk about Philosopher's Stone. I mean, that guy was, he could wrap things around your head and plant seeds in your head for thought to blossom later that you were like, holy crap, now I see the forest for the trees. Thank you, Mr. Krauthammer.
Yeah, he was a smart man. But yeah. He was also, I think he had, I'd like to offer two things about him. Number one, he did something he's a hero of mine, but he did something I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Years ago when Barack Obama was elected president and sent off with champagne toasts from all the journalists in Chicago to Washington, he shows up in Washington and George Will and Charles Krauthammer invite him to dinner. You know, when he was president-elect. Like, we should come over to Georgetown and we'll sit and talk of cabbages and kings. And I'm sure they'd sat in the library and it was, you know, George Will was the Colonel character. And
Colonel Mustard? Was there murder involved?
No, I was thinking more of what's the one with Eliza Doolittle? My Fair Lady.
Oh, Professor Higgins.
Yes, and Charles Krauthammer's Professor Higgins. Colonel Pickering and Professor Higgins, and they're talking to Eliza, and they're trying to make him into a lady. And the same thing, they were trying to make Obama into a man of Washington, because really, they, even though they're conservatives, they are of Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Of the ruling class. And I think that's been lost, perhaps it's good, not that I want him to die, but that whole issue, the whole thing of being part, the journalists are part of the ruling class. I think that is Versailles. I think the next step is toe dancing and buckles on your shoes and powdered wigs, and then the guillotine comes off.
Was it Martha, the owner of the Washington Post?
Catherine
Graham. Yeah, and if you see the movie The Post, she's whining and dining with all of them. You know, all of the movers and shakers and the high-level officials in the Nixon administration and in government generally.
Is it okay to wine and dine with politicians?
Well, I'm not. Well, let me ask you. I'm not telling any secrets because it came out in news stories. But the fact that the publisher and editor in chief of the Chicago Tribune talks with and tweets with the mayor of Chicago on many times a week. They're friends, and is that okay? I mean, does that? He's never, and to be fair, he has never, ever, ever told me not to draw Rom or do it.
He's not a reporter. Bruce Dold is a reporter at heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a journalist.
You have to know. Who did that story? The Sun-Times?
Remember they leaked, I think we did. They leaked the Tribune or the Sun-Times when they leaked they got hold of his emails.
Yeah. Oh, well, did they also have an editorial about how Jorge Ramirez is working for Michael Sachs, the mayor's money guy? No.
Well, John.
I don't think they did that, and I think Robert Feeder has mentioned it as Edwin Eisendrath that criticizes John Cass, and Edwin says, shame on me. Really? Shame on me? I'm not the one in the deal. Nah. Shame on you, dude.
With Krauthammer, one last word. He represents for me a dying generation that was the conservative intellectualism of my youth. You know, guys like him, guys like Will, guys like Buckley, and
serious men
thinking. And Jeff McNally, the great cartoonist, was part of that. You never think of him that way, but he was deeply involved in that whole movement. And it moved me. It was like, okay, here is something that is serious men thinking seriously about serious issues. And they
League of Great Men in a library with their smoking jackets.
Yes.
But I can see.
And it goes back to what we were talking about before you got here, Scott, about the idea that these guys knew their reputation was all they had and their name was all they have as far as backing up what they're saying. And they would never find themselves tweeting someone's, you know, insulting someone in public or
have
doing something.
Have you ever seen that from George Will or from Charles Krauthammer? I do see it from other journalists who of the left who refer to
right. It goes
politicians. Yeah, but I see a lot of it on the left.
Yeah. Right.
I don't read, that Corey Lewandowski fellow that made fun of the mention of the girl with the Down syndrome. It's a Moza. He's a right-wing hack. I'm not interested in those people. Is that his name? I just want to make sure. He's like Womp Womp,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But so is his spiritual sister. What's her name? Rachel Maddow. Like, I can't talk. The kids are in cages. But they were in cages for Obama, and you didn't cry then.
But they were in Obama cages, and they were nicer,
he has
softer.
Made of opium.
He had a heart. He had a heart. Was...
And one last name, Milt Rosenberg, was part of that generation
as well. Yes, he was.
And so, you know, for those of us who were not as smart as these guys, and are not as smart as these guys, it was nice that they could articulate things in a way that made them...
Well, is Ben Shapiro the next Charles Krauthammer?
No.
I don't know. He's a pretty... funny and smart guy, but the delivery is different.
Well, that's the thing.
But at least he deals with ideas.
Yeah, this is true.
You know who I still like? And you tell me if you know Peggy Noonan's work. Do you dislike her?
I like her to some extent. I did not like the fact that she let it out that some of the great speeches from Ronald Reagan were written by her. That's, to me, not old Washington.
No, that's speechwriters. In fact, I was watching the West Wing watching West Wing, and they say that speechwriters, why didn't we know that you wrote this? He says, because that's not what speechwriters do.
Unless they're Ted Sorensen, and they write Pulitzer Prize-winning books about the profile of courage and never get the credit.
Well, then they do, you know, the election books, which were unreadable. But
no.
Well, I tell you what, you don't have to read this. Just sit down, find us on iTunes, subscribe, learn how to make a pie. Learn how to find out journalists should be tweeting, what they should be tweeting and not tweeting. And come back again for another edition. Wait, I can't stop. I have to say one more thing. For Scott Stannis, mild-mannered editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. For Jeff Carlin, mild-mannered WGN producer and master pie baker. And for me, John Cass, standing on the sugar cookie in a sea of liberal milk, and it's all crumbling around the edges, and I don't know what to do. So come back next week to find out if I'm still standing. And this has been the Chicago Way.